Hello, and welcome to episode 97 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me, as always, the creator of the British superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who, like a TARDIS, is bigger on the inside than the outside, it's Tony Esmond.
Got depth. I thought you were going to go there, the Doctor Who thing was for... the co-star of this week's episode.
Yeah, we're going to bring that up. I popped up in this week's Doctor Who. Obviously, I've taken a trip in the TARDIS and gone back in time and de-aged considerably.
who pointed it out? I can't remember who it was now. Do you remember?
Pete Davies, I think.
Yes.
Oh, right, yeah. Did make me laugh. Fucking I laughed out loud when I saw that.
I saw the notification. I went, what's this? It's like the broadside.
I got a bit panicky because you hadn't commented, and I thought you were just smashing. You were going around to his house.
Oh no, not at all. I'm my house off.
For anyone out there who doesn't know what we're talking about, on the recent episode of Doctor Who, there happened to be a character in it that looked very much like a young Daniel Butcher, and it was posted up on the Awesome Pod, Awesome Comics Talk, wasn't it?
Yes, group. Yeah, it was.
And it's made my year.
What did you say? This is the best thing I've ever seen.
And also, I think it makes a change that it's not me getting the absolute shit kicked out of me online.
We have got a new lead paragraph, haven't we? Yeah, you've done a new publicity still.
Yeah.
We should get him on that bloke.
That's been, to be fair, we were sport of a choice for Vince, but me and Tony are a little harder to capture that essence.
Iconic, aren't we?
What's yours for Men in Black 3?
Oh, Tony? Yeah, God, that weird bloke.
Oh, yeah, and my likeness was some decapitated head from a horror movie or some fucking wanker from McDonald's, like, playing a milkshake like it's a bagpipe. I have been really done over.
You have that one from the Guardian dating column as well.
Oh, yeah, that was a really good one. Oh, yeah. That date went quite well, didn't it, Vince?
Yeah, it did go quite well.
Yeah.
Lot of wankers. But it did go very well. Yes, it's, as you can tell, there's no ghost. There's no ghost this week.
Fucking hope not. That's scary, don't say that.
There's no guest this week. After our wonderful month of like having guests on and talking about some crazy after our genre-tastic month. Make the most of that, because the last time I'm going to say that.
That's coming back next year.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, after that fantastic month. Well, was it a month? Yeah, it was a whole month, wasn't it? We decided to just spend some time together.
Yeah, we like this.
Yeah.
It's nice to have guests. Well, most of them, to be fair.
Yeah.
But this was quite nice. Quite nice.
Yeah.
And then those guests, you can go trouserless. Unbuckle the...
Unbuckle...
Trouserless.
What are these trousers of what you speak? Yeah, so it's just the three of us to talk about our topic, and we're talking about the front and center of the comics industry, quite literally front and center. We're talking about comic book covers now, from the classics to what we see in the small press. Now, covers always inspire debate, some good, some bad. I knew this topic was going to provide a lot of discussion and some furious sharing of our lovely listeners' favourite covers, and we were not disappointed, were we?
Yeah, we got to about 230 comments in one thing, didn't we?
It's been the most popular topic so far on our Facebook group, and had tons of Twitter replies with folks posting examples of some amazing and classic covers. So, in short, it's been a cracking week online, which is rare. I mean...
amongst the other shit that we have to put up
amongst all of the other shit. See, if you pay attention to our feeds, you see cool stuff happening. The rest of the world is just an apocalyptic wasteland of shit.
Looking like shit, Justin Bieber's and burning comics.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm sure a lot of you out there want us to talk about that. And we might do before the end of the show, but we're not going to do it now because we're going to start. Because we're going to stay positive.
Cover it.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, the Punisher's back again. See what I did there?
To be fair, we did share a few covers that were a little bit lively that we didn't dare put on social media as well, didn't we?
Yeah. Our WhatsApp conversation between the three of us has been quite lively.
Oh, if only you could see it. So funny.
If only.
We're just trying to stay away from the being negative because we do that quite well. So we're trying not to. But I'm sure we could have done a thread of poor covers.
No.
Yeah.
No, this first show is all about the love. It's all about the great comic book covers. Perhaps maybe in the future we'll talk about some bad ones.
Yeah, we might do another like we did with the Image thing, but not these comics thing. Yeah.
So
yeah, that was fun though.
And
fun for one week, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If before we ramble on for the rest of the show, we just want to say thank you to everyone who got involved, and like we hope you had fun looking back on all that awesome artwork, because I know I did.
Yeah,
it was awesome seeing all the stuff that's been posted.
Yeah.
So
let's makes you want to buy loads of comics as well. But when you see a good cover, it makes you want to buy it, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people would say that's the whole point of it, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
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 But okay, let's start with this. Comic book covers. What's the point of them? No. What do you think?
Pitch it to us.
do you know what? I'm going to bring that back. I'm totally going to bring that back. Because you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Let's get Stuart on again.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks very much. Yeah. Anyway, seriously, though, what do you guys think is the state of the comic book cover today in general?
I'm going to say, I mean, because I'm a child of a different era around comics, and I have to say I like a comic that tells a story. So it doesn't necessarily have to tell like some huge story, but it has to say something. And I think what we're getting at the moment, occasionally, not all the time, we're getting sort of almost what I refer to as stock footage covers. So they're covers that have sat there for a while that might contain a couple of the characters or the main character in a sort of dramatic pose or something like that.
Are we talking about in the sort of the bigger sort of publisher?
I think mostly, yeah. But I mean, the small press is also, you know, guilty of it on occasion, I think. You know, simply putting your main character in a dramatic pose on the cover isn't often enough for me. I was looking, when we spent the week really looking through covers, and especially yesterday, and I looked at one, and it was X-Men 136, which was the one where the Byrne cover where Cyclops is holding a dead Phoenix in his arms, you know. And look, I know that that tells the story from the previous issue where she died, but what it does is it also has the reaction of all the characters in the background and stuff, and it actually says something, you know. Well, if you just have had, you know, just a stock footage of Cyclops, you know, looking dramatic, then it wouldn't have had half the impact, and I wouldn't remember it. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't remember it as a great issue as I do now, sort of thing. Or, for example, the other one I looked at was The Killing Joke, which is a fairly simplistic image, but it's got the Joker holding the camera up,
and yes,
and that's incredibly, and that just is evocative of the story and is also very memorable. And you do think, when you look at that, you think, right, why is he holding a camera? He's got to have done something awful. He's taken a picture of it. He's also sarcastically saying, smile, something terrible has gone on in front of him. It makes you want to buy the book and open it, you know?
Yeah, the kind of whole camera draws you in as well, and the fact that it's interacting with the viewer.
Yeah.
He's taking a picture of you.
And yeah.
So, it's a great cover.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between posters and covers. I think that some people don't always see that. There's some things that make a great poster don't always make a good comic cover. What do you think?
I agree. Yeah.
I totally agree. I mean, some comic covers, especially, they look more like sort of pin-ups, don't they? That you see in the back of a comic rather than being representative of what's actually going on inside.
If I was going to see a pin-up style cover, as long as it kind of relates to what's in the issue, of sort of like if they're fighting in a jungle, it's a pin-up of one of the characters in a jungle. Do you know what I mean? Something relevant. But if it's just, like I said, generic pin-up of the characters doing something completely unrelated to what's going on within the comic,
yeah,
I'm not massive fan of that, if I'm honest.
Well, I don't want to point, you know, fingers at Batman, but for a long time, Detective Comics would have him, you know, sitting, you know, on the top of a building looking down at the street, or, you know, in a lot of shadow in an alleyway, and it just said nothing. It was just sort of this, it was a great piece of art often, but it just said nothing about what I should be getting inside and why I should buy it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that also ties into covers that have like an action pose, but it's not the artist that is on the interiors, is it? And then you'll have some sort of action scene, but it doesn't correlate to what's going on inside. It's such a completely different feel, and the action's completely different.
Honestly, maybe it's a bit kind of I don't know. If I see a cover, a comic cover, pick it up. That is great. And then I look inside, and the art, the cover doesn't represent the level of art inside.
Yeah.
I can deal with like a slight difference. It's not a massive problem, but if like the cover's an A star and I open it up and the artwork inside's a D, it's kind of like, oh fuck.
It doesn't even have to be the same style of art. So, you know, you could have a Humberto Ramos sort of cover,
exactly,
but then a more realistic style inside. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is like there's a, you know, and I hate
comparable
to say
quality.
It. I hate to say it, but it's happened to me maybe more times, I would say, in the small press and independents. But that, I think that's because I usually pick up more and more of those books now these days. When you get a great cover that they've hired a cover artist for, but the inside doesn't work as well.
I can understand why they've done it, but I think sometimes it can backfire.
Yeah.
There was one earlier this week that I was looking at from the ICC group, Independent Comic Creators, and they were giving away their comic free, and the cover was absolutely fantastic. The only thing I could go on was the thumbnail, and went inside, and it was like, this is really not very good. Yeah. Not just any art was bad, just everything about the production of it, like the speech bubbles were all wrong, everything was not great, and the cover was professional quality.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, oh, this is real hard to kind of get past.
I completely agree. I don't mind it being a different artist on the cover from inside. I'm not overly fussed. Sometimes I'd like, you know, I'd like to know, but I think with cover credits now, that makes a difference. Hmm. But I think you're right. It has to be, if it's a good cover artist, to me, it almost needs to be a good interior artist as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's your advert, isn't it?
You
might cover for the interior. You know?
Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, it's led to some... a lot of people listen, it's probably led to some awkward moments where you're at a convention and you decide to pick up an independent book, you look at a cover, wow, that's amazing, and the moment you open it up, you're like, I've made a horrible
mistake.
Your
face falls.
I've made a horrible mistake, and then you have to put it down, walk away in the nicest way possible.
I mean, it's also, let's be fair, it's also a very subjective medium, isn't it? Yes, art is a subjective medium.
Oh, completely.
Things that you like and, you know, things that we all like are different, you know. But there are certain basic fundamental things that you need to have on a cover that, you know, you have to be able to read it. You have to be able to see what's going on it. You know, it has to be, have a credit and a title that you can actually read. Once you get beyond that, it's a little bit subjective, but you're right, it's there to be an advert for the interiors,
especially,
you know,
in self-publishing and small press. We don't demand perfection, but if there's one thing that we do demand, it's competency. Does that make sense?
Yeah
It's got to seem like it's actually, you know, even if everyone's learning, you know, for God's sake, you know, you look at your early issues now and what you do. You know, you get to by issue 5, it's almost a completely different method and it looks so much more professional. That's not what we're saying. But even at the start, you know, it's just a sense of still got to look as good as it possibly can be. Some people, I think, rush some things that they shouldn't.
The expectation of quality has kind of, in my mind, small press, gone up considerably.
Oh, yeah, completely.
And it's not so much being the best at doing that, but just a level of competence to, like Tony said, when it's readable, it's legible, I can tell what's happening. I mean, apart from that, that's just the base level.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even though we're talking about this, you're certainly seeing it less and less in small press and independents these days. I mean, for me personally, you know, most of the time I pick up a lot of these books and I'm completely happy with them.
It's much better nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the comic cover is you're browsing a whole slew of titles, and you get pulled in by a comic cover that maybe you wouldn't have picked up before. You haven't tried that title before, and you go, "Oh wow, that Daredevil cover looks great." And then you look inside, you might buy that issue, and away you go. And they all had to kind of the way they obviously put in racks. You would only have like the masthead at the top to go off. It's a bit different in comic shops now because, for instance, Orbital, there's virtually the whole cover's on display, as far as I can tell. Is that right, Tony?
Yeah, for the mainstream stuff there is, but there's a couple of spinner racks for the small press stuff.
Yeah.
And in that you don't get the whole image sometimes.
No.
You know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when it comes to things like that, placement of logo graphics and titles and like, you know, do you think it's imperative that people think about this when designing covers, you know, for small press? Because like you say, in Orbital and most comic book shops out there, I would imagine that the big ones, When you look to your left or your right, depending on how you walk in, and you've got a wall of the main the mainstreams, you know, your Marvels, your DCs, your Images, etc. You don't always see the small press tucked in amongst them, I would say, but even if they've got an area, it'll be a spinner rack or something like that. You kind of, I think it helps to think about how it's going to be displayed. Do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've talked about sizes and all that sort of thing ourselves this week, haven't we? You know, what is the best size? You know, and it, yeah, you've got to be conscious of it, because a lot of like Orbital, for example, and I hate to go on about Orbital all the time, but Gosh does the same, and so does Food and Planet in Central London. There's a certain size to fit that cover on the shelf.
Yeah.
And it's just like a wall of adverts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Your design will have to be led by those constraints before anything else.
Yeah.
It's the same way as like check out the page sizes before you start making your comic.
Yeah.
Because you're designed to a certain size, and then you take it to the printer and it's like, well, that's not a great size, and then you've got to fuck around rejigging it.
Yeah.
Same
with if you're planning to put it into stores, you definitely have to think about these things. Because we're seeing more now, certainly on the shelves, with books like Image and Vertigo and stuff. Like books like Unfollow, or there's so many books from Image that they'll play with the placement of the title, or you know, it'll be an angle, it'll be down the side of the book, etc., etc. But they're getting premium shelf space, so you're probably not going to miss that title. But if you do that with your smaller book that's going to be tucked away somewhere, a lot of people might not actually know what it is and then pass over it. It's something to bear in mind. I mean, we're not telling you how to do these things. You should do
see to me. To me, I'm not a big follower of previews. I don't like things to be spoiled for me. So I've educated my brain over going to a comic shop in almost, you know, for almost 40 years, of recognizing comic covers and buying the one that I don't recognize. So it's almost like a catalog in my brain of covers, you know. And I think, I don't know what you guys think about this, but sometimes I go in and the covers are so similar to the last issue, I have trouble remembering whether I bought that or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you have to, I mean, you've certainly done it, Vince. The covers to the Red Mask are very different, aren't they? You know, there's no way you could mistake one for the other.
Yeah.
And I think as well as having this sort of strong image on the cover, it's also got to be different from the last issue. Because people are, I mean, I love David Mack's books. You know, I really like his art and everything. I'm a big fan of the way he draws and everything, but the Jessica Jones series, oh my god, they all look the same. I can't remember which one I bought.
Yeah.
Because it's the same colour palette. You know, it's very similar sort of drawn images, and I think, oh my god, have I bought that?
Yeah.
You know.
You find that a lot, especially as well, like with issue ones from the bigger publishers. One that springs to my mind is the new Guardians of the Galaxy, which has just come out from Marvel.
Yeah.
Now that's a team jumping forward. How many times, and you could argue, what else are you going to do with a number one? And certainly with a number one, to have that strong team image, or your strong singular character image, that's the one way you're going to do it, isn't it? Where the story the story doesn't have to be front and center necessarily with a number one, I would say. But looking at some of these covers, there's nothing that really jumps out to sort of say, apart from like the artist himself, that really screams that it's completely different. You know, even though they always say this is a brand new start, this is a new jumping on point, but in this day and age where there's new jumping on points every 3 months, you've got to think, hang on,
have I got you've got to do something clever these days. We were talking about it a minute ago before we came on, but the Justice League, the Wahaha series from the 80s, I presume, the Kevin Maguire, the first image of that, I know it's been homaged so many times so far, but with the group looking up at the camera looking sort of tough.
That's an absolute. That's a classic cover, though. You know that. That image, and certainly that. You know, DC even used. I don't know. Kevin Maguire did it. Where it was Justice League Antarctica. Did you ever read that?
No, I didn't read that.
That was like it was an annual. It was a one shot about these bunch of losers in the middle of Antarctica. It's a really good issue.
Right.
But that did that style of thing. I think it was Kevin Maguire as well. So
I'm sure they did one where they was all facing the wrong way. And one of them looking around.
I think that's like, is that international, whatever it was?
It might be,
Or quarterly or something, But that's another cover that is so iconic. I remember what's in that issue, but it doesn't have a huge amount to do with the cover. But the cover does tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, it has a little sort of little story to it, doesn't it? A very sort of, you could describe the story on the cover in a couple of sentences. But it sticks in your mind, where you know, I couldn't. So, some are just so similar as the series goes on.
Yeah.
I just don't. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are two very good comics. For example, BPRD, they're excellent comics and really well done. And I would love to buy them. And I, for a while, was buying the single issues. But because they had a real, I suppose it's kind of like a designer's sort of eye to them rather than, you know, the sort of Stanley sort of, you know, buy me sort of attitude, is they're very similar in a design sense. And I have to go, I ended up going back and photographing the last issue that I bought so that I knew where I could start again. Does that make sense? Right.
Yeah.
People seem to be a little bit obsessed these days, and that's a bad, you know, a good example of a bad sort of thing to do. But that obsessed with the design, everything seems to be trade design and stuff like that now, product design, rather than if you go back to the days of Stan and Carmine Infantino and all these sort of people who had an eye to the whole line. Then they were thinking, right, they basically did comics that said buy me on the cover. I mean, I think one of the Flash comics actually said buy this issue, didn't it? It had him shouting, if you don't buy this issue, the Flash will die or something, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it should be to me, rather than just being this sort of cool...
What, death threats?
Yeah, I think death threats, yeah. But I think people just think, that's a cool like design. We're going to run four issues with that similar design and... It doesn't help the buyer, you know.
Say people who one that's a kind of culprit of that is the Hawkeye covers. Although there's something I really like, there is a lot of that element that's kind of. There's been times where I say, have I seen that one already? It's like, no, that's a different one.
Yeah.
Because they're very similar design.
Yeah, because when it started off, you know, because it was a new sort of style, you had like two or three, four issues, and you're like, oh, these are great design covers. But sometimes it's, you know, they sort of try hard. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit harder.
Yeah.
It felt a bit more effortless when it started, but then eventually it's just getting to the point where sometimes a cover doesn't actually look like a cover when people are over-designing it, I think.
I mean, I buy the Walking Dead trades for my son, and I can't figure out which was the last one.
Yeah, fair.
They're very samey as well, you know.
Yeah.
One couple of sets of covers I can't bear are the Punisher covers that started with, like, Welcome Back, Frank. And they've just got that artist on it who does like the generic Punisher.
Tim. Is it Bradshaw? Is it?
Might be.
Yeah. Bradstreet.
Not hating.
Very sort of photorealistic.
Not hating on the star, what he does, but like these covers, they've just been like, they've done. And it's like, oh, I've got issue two, I'll just stick that one on out of a pile.
Yeah.
Because it does. Yeah. There's no representation of what's in the issue to the comic. It's just kind of like, well. Yeah, I didn't really like that. Didn't really get it.
The current run on Punisher is really good. Each cover, I haven't got that one yet. It's like that. Oh, that's what the story's about.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not like spoiling anything. It's just giving you like a little vibe of what's going to be happening inside. You know,
there was one I saw recently where it's got like the bloody footprints walking off in the snow.
Right.
And that was fantastic.
It was
like, that is just great. That's the kind of thing you see on the shelf, and it's like, gotta check this out.
Yeah,
it really works.
And also when you do it at the right time, like comic book shelves are such a, you know, it's like a hand grenade of colour, isn't it? You know, there's colour everywhere. So if you choose the right moment to just use white, and with a little splash of colour, that will pop more than anything that all these other ones have got.
Well, I'd say even though small press and independent stuff, you're more likely going to be selling your stuff in conventions, wouldn't you say, as opposed to in a store.
There's a lot
more people selling their stuff in the convention circuit than in a big comic book store. And there obviously you get the kind of the full whack of the cover image.
I think a lot of people, I mean, I haven't really got my books in stores.
No,
you know,
it's one of my aims this year to get that done.
But I think if you're going to, you have to sort of bear these sort of things in mind.
Because
the store will, you know, a lot of these stores, they support the small press, they'll work their ass off, but it gets to a point where if your comic doesn't look good enough for people to pick up and have a little flick through, you know, they can't do much about that, can they?
If you don't want to sell your comic, then don't worry about any of this. I think it's the answer to that one, isn't it, really? I think Comic House do it well. I think they've got a different, I can tell where I am with their comics because they do these very sort of iconic different covers, you know.
And again, they call back to what's happening in the issue.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going to spotlight this story. give some of the ideas, script to the artist, and then they knock out a cover, and it's really working.
Yeah, and you get a professional artist to do artwork of the design you've done. You look at it and you think, oh, my work is pointless. Why do I do this? Maybe that's just me.
But again, like, that cover is on par with the work you're going to get inside.
Yeah.
There's a level of quality there, so that carries through. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one kind of misstep was we love this age of 90s image.
Yeah.
Like DC and Marvel kind of scrambled, not quite as badly, but the variant covers have kind of the press covers, like with the cutouts and chrome covers.
Yeah, I suppose they weren't variants, were they? They were all the cover, weren't they?
The cover, yeah. And essentially, Shadowhawk was being sold on the cover gimmick because the content, in my opinion, wasn't very good.
Yeah, the cover was a really strong black and silver, wasn't it? It was actually foil.
They did like a fold-up one where the guy took his mask off, and fucking hell, the printing cost on that. It goes up.
They didn't care back then, did they? They were selling millions.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
What do you feel about variant covers, though?
I mean, it's obviously done to encourage stores to order more issues. Is the basis of it, isn't it? So there would be a 1 in 500, a 1 in 10, a 1 in 50 cover. So if the comic shop ordered 500 or 50 or 10 issues, they would get this variant, wouldn't they? That was the plan. And that was kind of where it went to. And then from that point, comic shops very, you know, cannily, you know, business sense-wise, said, well, let's sell this one for more, you know.
Yeah.
To make up for the fact they probably weren't selling 100 of the issues out of the 500 that they bought, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes from. And from that, I'm a little bit cynical, I have to say. But some of them, I have to say, I have bought. I mean, I think the price on variant covers has come right down if you're buying direct from a store these days. Yeah. And I will choose. I mean, I know my comic shop has, well, the one I go to has a couple of different variants on the shelf with the comics, you know, and one of them might be a pound more, and one of them might be by someone. I bought the Eternal Warrior Lambo cover recently because I thought it was excellent. It was like a 50p more or something, and I thought that's acceptable because I like that as a piece of art. Mm. But as much as I love his art, I wouldn't have spent 20 quid on it.
Yeah.
Like one of those things that it doesn't particularly bother me, as in, like, people can buy the variants all they want. I'm kind of there for the story and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, if people want to buy the covers that, I don't know, 40 quid extra for the same comic but a different cover, you go for it. It's it's totally up to you.
I think some of them are okay. I think some of them I like. You know, for example, I don't know, they get a particular artist. You know, they'll do like a Kirby homage, or they'll have I don't know Neil Adams month, and he'll do a load of covers. And I think that's cool. I like Neil Adams's art, so I will buy that. You know, but some of them that are, I don't know, fucking photographs, or, you know, the cat.
Ones yeah, recently, we had the cat ones, didn't we? The Valiant ones, and then we had the cosplay ones. I don't know if it gets more people buying the comics. I can't really find fault with it, but it's not really my cup of tea. I don't know.
Have you ever bought two issues of the same comic because you like the cover, the different covers?
No, I picked up two issues by accident. Well, actually,
that's the problem.
I've done that.
Yeah, and certainly, I've in Forbidden Planet they have those grab bags, don't they? Where you pick, I don't know, you get 5 books for a pound or something like that, something crazy like that. And I, you know, I always go in there, pick up like 3 or 4 maybe, and because of the variant covers, there's always a double. I've always got two copies of the same issue with different covers. What about variant covers in the small press and self-published? You don't see it so much, but I do know there's some out there.
I know Matt Garvey does it. He will send retailer editions with a different cover to shops for different ones. So that's a canny market strategy. If you get one from him, you get it one way. You go to the shop and you'll get it a different cover.
Yeah, okay.
But it leads onto a kind of a different thing. We discussed the kind of the different covers for the same product. But also, when you're producing covers for small press and you're doing stuff for online and digital and stuff, a variant cover to match the specifications there is needed. But apart from that, I can't think of too many others that do variant covers.
Mm. No, I can't think of anyone.
I've seen. You've I know been... Killscreen had a Ian Churchill variant on one of the issues, nice. I believe.
Yes, they did, didn't they? Oh, that wasn't that the regular one, and the other one was the very. Oh, maybe you're right. I'm not sure. Yeah, I got it digitally, so I got them both. But
And I know certainly some people have asked me before. Oh, have you ever thought about doing issue one with a variant cover or something?
And
if I'm going to be honest, it's something I have absolutely no interest in doing.
Yeah.
I'd rather save, you know, and that's not to say I don't want other artists drawing my character. You know, I'm not saying that. I'd rather have like some fantastic pinups down the road. When I collect it, and I'd rather just personally, I'd just rather do the covers myself, because also I know that what I do will hopefully be representative of what's in the comic, etc.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And we're talking about it. We'll talk about it later on in the show. But The Human Beings by Stuart McCune has got a variant cover, but you can choose which one you want as part of the Kickstarter, I think, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
You know, and they're both really good. You know, and any piece of art by him, I would, you know, encourage anyone to get.
I think Kickstarter is quite an interesting way to go about it.
Yeah.
As well, It gives just the buyers just more choice, you know.
Even if
shall we say it's the illusion of choice because they're buying the same thing, just slightly different. But the more choice you have, the better your product looks on that Kickstarter page, doesn't it?
Really? Yeah, got more options. And you kind of like, oh, I can do this. We can do that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, some companies specialize in it, don't they? I mean, Dynamite do loads, don't they?
Yeah, Dynamite always do.
They get some great art, artists, and you know, Gabriel Hardman's done a few, Lambo's done a few.
Yeah,
you know, there's some really good artists there, and I've double dipped on a couple of covers. I'll completely put my hands up because I'm a big fan of a certain artist's work. You know,
Alex Ross covers.
Yeah. More so when I'm going. So, for example, before I went to New York last year, I bought a couple of Gabriel Hardman's variants so I could get him to sign them. Yeah, because I really like them. Yeah, that's okay. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing is that
enjoying
sketch covers now.
Yeah,
obviously, that's the other thing, isn't it? That seems to be a big thing. How long has that been around? A couple of years?
I think it's been around for probably a long time, but I think it's certainly taken off to the point of you see a lot more in comic book stores. Probably, I would say, the last 3 years, 4 years.
I think
they're actually quite difficult to draw, aren't they, apparently?
Brian Bender was in me. You get the comic of an issue and it's got the blank cover in it, and then you give it to an artist to draw the cover.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Or artists will then they'll buy a load and then sketch on them and then they'll have them on their table. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to sketch covers, I don't understand sketch covers that have a completely different character than the title. I don't understand that at all.
So it's like it always seems to be Deadpool or Venom, as far as I've seen.
Okay. So we get an issue of Teen Titans with Venom on the cover.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose it's some hilarity to be had from that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And certainly, I guess if someone's asked this person to draw it, then fuck it. You know, they only pay their money, they'll get it.
Pay your money, you make your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some Speedcock drawn on it.
Yeah.
If you've got any variant covers you want us to draw Speedcocks on. We will be at London Super Comic Con later.
Well, one of the things I mentioned with the variant covers is when you're taking your comic to digital, like say for instance Comixology, your comic cover has to have different traits to what it did in a print issue because of the specifications. Size wise you're dropping from say roughly an A4 size down to less than a quarter of that size, and people are going to be browsing through a whole load of thumbnails, and if your title, your logo, masthead, whatever, blends in with a comic and it's not identifiable or not a strong image, people might just flick on by.
I mean, that's very interesting, I think, because how many times on this show have I said, oh, I was browsing through Comixology and I picked up this issue. Every week I find it interesting just browsing through all those covers, and certainly this week I WhatsApped the guys a couple of absolute hideous ones that I saw on Comixology this week. We shall name no names, but there is some. Well, they were.
I mean, if you look at your combo, you can zoom it out to like 25% at least, and then see what it looks like and see if you can read the title of your comic.
Good
and
idea. Yeah.
Get across what it's trying to say. Yeah. Then you're kind of realizing, is this working?
Yeah.
And that's no bearing on the full size one, but when you're saving it as the thumbnail. For Comixology, you're going to have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
That's really important, I think, mate, from a colouring point of view as well. I think so many comic covers are really dark.
Yeah.
They've really got black backgrounds. And if you, when you say, when you're scrolling through Comixology or whatever, you know, app you're using, that's going to be lost. That image is just going to be another blobby black page. You're just going to go past, don't you? Yeah.
It almost has to be a lot more harsher, contrasty, more brutal kind of...
Strong image. That,
very strong.
That, tells the story of why you should buy that, and you can see the title on it, basically, in it. Yeah.
You know? So say maybe, say your comic, your masthead or logo had like a kind of a texture or a metal look or something, and that looks fine on the print edition. But in that, you'd maybe want to strip it back to white or black, depending on the background, so it really stands out.
Yeah, it's a good idea, that, mate. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, just scrolling through, like as we're speaking now, this doesn't just mean small press either. For instance, there's an X-Men Gold number 3. I know it's X-Men, so because I can tell from the art, but the way that sort of title is placed in the top left at that sort of size that Dan's talking about, because it's a busy cover, it just becomes a bit of a jumbled mess.
Yeah.
And also there's lots of images going on there. There's lots of sort of text pieces. But you see the one underneath it, which is a James Bond number 3, which is looks like a fantastic title, actually. I must say, Rafa Lobosco is one of my favourite sort of indie artists at the moment. He's working on that. Stellar stuff.
Okay.
But that's very clear. You know, you've got a nice white band at the top where it says James Bond 007, and you've got a nicely sort of designed sort of cover that sort of... It's in keeping with what that book should be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that immediately makes me think, oh, I'm quite interested in getting that.
Like you said, the X-Men... trading on the X-Men title,
people are
going to buy the X-Men, but when it's a small press,
they've got
none of that.
That's the whole. It's a whole other discipline, isn't it?
What
you're saying is certainly opened my eyes. The digital cover image as an advert is a whole other discipline to the comic cover.
Got
completely different, isn't it?
And we have to bear this in mind when we're doing all our books for print. Looking at this list, it just reminded me that The Walking Dead, so massive that the digital numbers probably don't mean a great deal to them, even though they probably do massive numbers. But do you remember when it started, The Walking Dead had that big font on the front? You could not miss that title from a mile away. And now it's a lot smaller. It's one line at the top of the book. It looks a hell of a lot smaller if you look at that thumbnail now.
Mm. Okay.
But that book doesn't have to worry about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you've got them already.
Yeah.
I
think one of the strongest covers this week, if I'm looking at the weekly ones, is a Marvel book. It's the new Black Bolt cover. I think
I love that. That's a great issue as well.
Yeah.
Loved it.
That's I know that's certainly been everywhere on online and social media because that's getting a bit of buzz at the moment.
But that was another one. It was actually a postcard, wasn't it? As well, they did the postcard treatment, which they do for a few of their issues, don't they? It tends to be like one a week or something you see at the front of comic shops. They send out postcards, and that is such a strong, striking image.
Yeah.
And it's very reflective of what's in the book as well, which I liked.
Yeah. You know? It's got that. Is it that sort of art style going through it then, that book?
Yeah, it's crazy. He's in a space prison. It's crazy visuals.
Nice.
But yeah, I recommend it. I really enjoyed it. Really, yesterday. Yeah, very good.
Nice. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will know what we're talking about. But yeah, it's fantastic. It's just, but
more about the Inhumans soon as well. Let me just hint at that.
Yes,
we might have someone coming on to talk about that, might we?
Yes, indeed. That should be interesting. We'll announce that in a couple of weeks. Quite exciting. There's so much more cool stuff to come from us.
Yeah.
We may be reaching the grand old age of 100, but we're not going to stop.
let me ask you a question then. Let me ask this one.
Go for it.
You're doing a trade paperback of your run.
Yeah.
Do you make the cover one of the covers of the series, or do you do a new image?
New image. For me, personally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Even though they know what they're getting, if they'll see it immediately and know that it's the package of the Red Mars, for example, first five issues, or... You know, Vanguard.
My plan for that, I'm going to do a whole new cover treatment for it. It will have all the original covers within it. Probably at the back.
I like that, actually. I like that in that, yeah.
But I want, you know, the book's a collection. It's a one-off. I want it to look like a one-off. Do you know what I mean? I want it to stand out. For instance, if I had a convention table and I still had some individual issues left, I want it to look different from... The issues, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I want it to look like a standalone piece.
I prefer that, but a lot of companies go for the stock image from an issue in the series, don't they?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I do prefer that because it's that nice little artifact, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I also like what you're saying there, especially when I buy something like a Dynamite trade or something. I like to see the variant covers that have been in the series in the back.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's a nice little treat sometimes.
I love
the
back,
you know,
material.
Yeah. In terms of like having a cover within the book, do you prefer all your covers sort of collected together and then put at the end, or do you like it when they break up like the chapters?
I like it broken up, actually. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
I've done my Vanguard like broken up.
Mm.
Yeah. So as they're like chapter bits.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think
I think it's clear to the reader of kind of like, right, okay, that was the end of that issue.
Mm.
And
yeah, it's like a chapter break as well, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some of that also depends on the size of your book. Like, like say, Dan, your Vanguard book has how many issues in it? Is it 9 or 10?
13.
13.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working on 13.
Yeah. So, you know, you need that sort of chapter break, because if you just had that chunk of story in one go, it might be a bit much.
Yeah, a bit bewildering.
But I think if it's just a 4-issue series, for instance, I don't think you necessarily need it then.
Potentially not, no.
No.
With the covers on Vanguard, the first collection done by Chris Imber, is a kind of a white cover, and you're kind of looking up at the team and it's all kind of majestic. And they're like godlike. And then the second one, it's going to be flipped, because obviously the story goes quite badly for them. And they're kind of looking down on them like you're above, and it's a dark cover, and they're all messed up, to kind of reflect the two sides of the story.
Oh,
I did a bit of known a little bit about sort of camera technique and stuff. That is something that I'm suddenly reminded of it again this week. I was, you know, with all the sort of political stuff on, you're reminded of the skew that a lot of TV stations put on politicians.
Yeah.
Because if you shoot them from below, shooting up towards them, that mentally gives you that sort of hero image.
Yeah.
If you shoot down on them, you are mentally and sort of psychologically looking down on that person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that is a technique that's definitely used in a lot of covers, you know.
It's one thing as well. It happened a little while ago with the Tories, and obviously someone told them, like, when you go out and stand on this platform and you make your speech, you have your legs apart, like with a kind of powerful stance. And they fucking took it out to 11, to the point where their legs, they're almost like halfway down into the splits. So the legs sort of like out powerfully, kind of like arm, shoulders back. That's a very kind of heroic.
They look more like status quo.
You see that on. Yeah, like about 101 comic covers. One thing I always like to see on politicians, if you get two politicians shaking hand, the one that wants to be on the right-hand side of a handshake. Because on the right, there's a more powerful, your arm's going over your body. And when on the other side, you're kind of, your arm's jutting out.
Yeah, yeah.
And no politician wants to be on the one where you look weak side. So you sometimes see them do these flipping around, trying to get on that side.
Maybe having some good policies is going to help one day, but they'll get around to that bit, won't they, eventually, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Past that sort of handshaking and what people say on fucking radio stations, as opposed to...
You can see your ball sack through your trousers because your legs are so far apart. Yeah, what other genital are available, I'd like to point out.
But yeah, definitely kind of... I don't know what I was going to say there. But yeah, like kind of the posing stuff and kind of what you're looking for on the cover...
Yeah.
Pay attention to it, because it goes a long way.
Okay. What about the sort of small press and independent? I mean, a lot of the books we're talking about here are quite the mainstream, the superhero books, or like, you know, the bigger sort of, I don't know, the zombie books or whatever. What about the small press slice of life? Because that's a completely different discipline, isn't it, when it comes to front covers?
Yeah. To a certain extent it is. You still need to convey that mood.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think it needs to be clear. I mean, one of the strong ones for me is Avery Hill's Reeds.
I was thinking about them a minute ago. Really good iconic covers, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know,
very clear. You know exactly what you're looking for there, don't you? Really,
Tilly Walden's City Inside, that cover crushes it. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Rachel Smith's Rabbit.
Yeah,
the two schoolgirls with it overlooking, we've been kind of standing the huge rabbit shadow. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think I sent you the world's worst cover this week, didn't I? I don't think there's any doubt about that cover.
Yeah,
I sent you.
It's really bad.
Yeah,
it wasn't really bad.
Yeah,
it's horrible because there are some bad covers going around, and it's not something I would point out on social media saying, take a look at this, it's awful.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I've done that. Yeah. I've done that on social media, so I'm a hypocrite as well.
And don't burn covers. Never burn them.
No.
It's not the thing about
covers. Especially when they're going for silly prices on eBay.
Fucking hell.
Pick up your free comic and then sell it on eBay for profit. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
What's that Morty comic? What's that cartoon that everyone's going on about at the moment?
Which one?
Something and Morty, is it?
Morty.
Yeah, that's 8 quid on eBay today. That's good, isn't it?
Jesus Christ. That's a great show, though.
It's a great show.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
You keep telling me that's funny.
If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's fucking hilarious.
It's
really, really good.
You'll like it, Tony, because it's absolutely batshit insane.
Yeah. Is it good? That's what I like you too.
Yeah. That's true. We'll also give you nosebleeds.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't do for Vanguard for a little while is because it was a webcomic, I didn't need to do covers. Covers are irrelevant. I'm not printing it. So kind of like
it's
my
interesting
kind
you
of
say that because I do see a lot of webcomics doing them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of realised, well, if I'm going to start printing this thing and people use it as a kind of a chapter mark, having covers. I didn't start making covers till I was about 5 issues. No, till I was about 8 issues in.
Yeah,
it's a bit weird, isn't it? Because if I click on a webcomic and there's just a cover, and they say come back in, you know, a week, and I'll have the first page up, I think, oh, that's a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite happy like turning a cover when I'm reading one. You know,
I think for a webcomic, when you launch a webcomic, you should have at least 5 or 6 pages ready to go as soon as you launch it.
Good idea. Yeah,
launch one page and there's a picture of fucking some stars in the earth, like the beginning. So come back.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, we'll be talking a bit more about webcomics in an upcoming episode. Probably a few upcoming episodes, actually. God, we've got so much to talk about. We keep going off topic. Yeah. So how did you find that then, Dan? Like, when you realised, oh, I better do some covers for this. Well, not it obviously wasn't as simple as that. But by the time you came to draw those covers, you had obviously progressed, hadn't you? Did you have to? Did you have to sort of reread those early issues to kind of give you an idea?
I just went through and picked out like a key moment and tried to have that try and illustrate what was in the rest of the comic. But I always feel like I'm hoodwinking readers a little with the wow, look at this cover, and then they're getting it. Oh,
oh, Dan.
So. But no, that wasn't really a problem. I kind of really enjoyed it. Once I got going, it was kind of like something had been unblocked inside me, and I just found it great to kind of artistically like get
a lot of
fibre.
That do that. But how do you find the cover process though? That you know the process of actually designing and stuff. Because certainly on Twitter, a lot of people have sort of said that designing a cover is a really difficult thing to do. Do you enjoy it?
I love it. Yeah, it's great.
I love it.
I can't think. I can understand why everyone wants to go for cover gigs. Not only do they pay a little better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's kind of like you're the star player of the team doing the cover.
Why do you think they pay better? This is just a devil's advocate question here. Because if you think about it, the inside of a comic, you know, that can be sometimes a hell of a lot more work than a cover.
Oh God, yeah. That's the slog, isn't it?
Yeah, but the cover is, that's normally the bigger bucks, shall we say.
It's like the 100 meter race and the 1200. You both win, you get gold medal, but one of them's only doing a little bit of work in comparison.
Yeah. That's such a good comparison.
If like you said earlier, when you're kind of walking along and then you see the comic, you go, wow, that cover looks great.
Yeah.
You pick it up. That job, the cover artist's job's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got you.
And I think certain people do great covers, you know, and are known for it. Like Dave Johnson, he does great covers, doesn't he?
Oh,
and
Dave Johnson, who I ranted about on the Facebook group, he's my favourite cover artist. I think bar none. And I love a lot of these artists, but in terms of... because I come from a bit of a design background as well, just everything, the composition, just the fonts, plus he's just an amazing illustrator, full stop anyway.
Designer, isn't he? You know?
And just the way, how many Punisher covers has he done that is just, they're almost like wonderful sort of noir-like Alfred Hitchcock like posters, a lot of like his Punisher stuff. It's amazing. Yeah. And then like he's done, but he's worked for everyone, hasn't he? He's gone from Deadpool to BPRD to, you know, DC Comics. He's done everything. I was quite pleased to see that when I posted it on the group talk that a lot of people were liking his covers.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. What was your, if you have to name, would he be your favourite cover artist, would he?
Yeah, I think so. Because
what about you, Dan? Go on, mate. Sorry, go on.
I think purely because that, like I said, that design sense, and there's rarely, actually, I can't think of any where, in my eyes, he's put a foot wrong in terms of what the cover is. But
yeah,
I was trying to just looking through the thread now, and someone posted up some comics from the old Aliens ones.
Oh,
and
yes.
I was like, they're really taking back. So, they were fantastic.
Yeah.
It's so evocative of the films and the atmosphere. They captured it down to a T. And I can't remember who fucking posted up or what the artist was.
Dave Kennedy.
Yes. Yeah. It's just like, absolutely great. I love those covers.
Yeah.
Is it Dennis Bouvet? Is that the name of the guy he's posted up?
I think so. Yeah, they're beautiful covers. And I think, for me personally, those sort of Alien covers and the Predator covers and the Terminator covers, etc., that for me, that was at the high point of Dark Horse. When all of those covers just seem to be works of art, those, you know, that's my renaissance of Dark Horse, if you know what I mean. And I know, obviously, they're doing quite well now, but that's the era I think of because of those covers, because of those wonderful covers you used to see. And
Aliens vs. Predator was a huge seller for them
And the first book is one of my favourite books.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
I'd have to get that fucking trade of that Aliens comic, because I can remember that the Earth War one. Mental general putting the aliens' numbers on the aliens' heads and trying to get him to fight for him.
Oh, was that the one that had all the painted artwork?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember that.
The Predator one, which was... was it Arnie's... It was kind of Arnie's brother was the main character.
Yes. Yeah.
The first Predator one they did, wasn't it? I can't think of it now.
Cold War, I think. That sounds about right. Yeah.
That was great as well.
Yeah.
Dan, who would you say is your favourite sort of cover artist? You had to go for someone, who would he be?
I don't know. That's a really, really, really tough one. I've been thinking about that all week.
Yeah.
There's odds and sods I can kind of pick out and say that is a fantastic cover. And then not so much on some of their other stuff. Mike Zeck.
I was about to say Mike Zeck is probably has to be one of yours, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does some fantastic work.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I think I posted the... because I got that Marvel Artist Edition. I got it as a leaving present from a job I left. That Marvel covers book, you know, like the Artist Edition.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all different covers and inside it. And it's got the Master of Kung Fu. I think it's his 71, which Zek did, which is the... I think Gene Day inked
it. Was that the one you posted on the group that was the yin-yang sort of sign?
It's a jigsaw puzzle that's falling
that
apart at the bottom.
Unbelievable, that cover. Oh.
I love that cover so much. I must have bought that issue about five times for people and stuff. But it's because in it, there's no violence, and he's against violence, and he's making a jigsaw puzzle in the comic. But so it's got him in a sort of fighting pose on the cover, and the jigsaw is falling apart in the shape of the sort of yin yang, which is obviously what he's known for. Mm. So he's sort of his serenity is being broken up by the violence that's coming back at him again.
Yeah,
and it's just this incredible cover. It's just like simple but iconic, but also has a bit of depth to it, you know.
Plus,
that's beautiful stuff.
The draftsmanship on show, just because the way the jigsaw pieces fall apart, and he's bearing in mind what part of the image that is.
Yeah,
that's
just incredible.
So good.
Yeah.
And for me, Mike Zeck was one of those cover artists that created some of my favourite covers when I didn't know cover artists. When I didn't know. I mean, we talked about earlier this week the Punisher Weekly sort of A4 comics.
Yeah.
And when that started in the UK, of course, it was all these Mike Zeck covers. Do you know what I mean? You
had
I think number two was one of my favourite images when I was a kid, which was him. He's sort of in an alleyway and he's being lit up by his huge machine gun that he's firing. That's a Mike Zeck image, isn't it? And he's sort of screaming.
He did that so well, Zeck. That sort of light on the face and that sort of thing. He did that really well, didn't he? Yeah, really good stuff.
Yeah.
I would say I've got a few names. I'll just run them past you, see what you think.
Go on.
Neil Adams, obviously.
Yeah.
The iconic images like Superman breaking the chains in Superman 233, Superman versus Muhammad Ali. If anyone's seen that,
that's a good one. Yeah.
there's a history to even that cover, because there was all kinds of arguments of placement of who should be in the audience and what should be going on, you know. And I think it was backwards and forwards to Muhammad Ali's lawyers, and you know, whether he was happy with it and all that sort of thing. Then they did Batman 264, which is the one where Batman's laying, there's quite a lot of chest hair on display on this one, where Ra's al Ghul has stabbed Batman with a sword, and he's on the floor with his shirt off, and Ra's al Ghul is sort of walking away. That's a great one.
They're always weird, those covers, when Batman's got the mask on and then he's chestless, bare-chested.
Yeah.
It's always strange.
It's a tasteful amount of chest hair.
Yeah.
And then, I'm blanking on whether he did the Superman versus Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man. He didn't do the interiors, did he? But, or did he? That image of Spider-Man hanging to on the top of the Empire State Building and Superman flying.
Oh, God,
That's an amazing cover. I'll mention another one, Steranko. You know, he's done some amazing stuff. That one with where the Hulk is being crushed by the Hulk, you know, logo, and it's sort of straining to keep it up. And then we talked about also what cover came out, which is an interesting fun game you can all play at home. What cover came out the month you were born? And mine was a Steranko cover, X-Men 50, which is Polaris, sort of floating in a sort of green sort of thing in the background. Just incredible cover.
Nice. Yeah. I'm gonna have fun playing that game. I'm gonna Google, see what came out. I'm surprised I haven't done it before.
We can kick it off on the group tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or today, when the show comes out.
That'd be good.
When we'll forgive you, it doesn't have to be, because I know that a lot of comics will say November, but they come out in September or something, don't they? But we just go for the month that's on the cover. I think that's pretty easy, isn't it?
Yeah. Simon Russell also posted up a great one in the thread where there was a chap going around. No, sorry, it's Alan Henson. He was a chap going around. What was the guy's name? And basically, he gets a cover
the moment after.
Yeah, like the moment after the cover image, and they're great. Like, kind of just what's good is like you'd go to an artist and say, right, I want this, and you think, oh yeah, I've done this a million times before, and then someone comes up with a concept like that, and suddenly like you can be
later.
really creative with what you're doing, and really think about what you're gonna. Where you're going to take it. They're not telling you what to do. You're giving guidelines, and you can kind of flesh it out as from there.
Yeah. I think he's done that Batman one I mentioned. I think Batman's actually sitting up and he's still got it stuck in his chest. This is 1 minute later. If you go to comicartfans.com, it's Comic Art Gallery of Michael 1 minute later.
Nice.
You can find it there. Yeah.
It's great.
That's really
good.
Yeah. Speaking of Simon Russell, he obviously did the iconic cover, didn't he? The quite the famous That's Not My Merkin.
One of your favourite books, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah. And then the other one worthy of note is braveandboldlost.blogspot.co.uk, which is just genius, where it's all different. They've got a load of Brave and Bold and Super Team Family and all this sort of thing, and they've put other characters in it, so it'll have Batman versus Asterisks and all this sort of thing. Yeah. That's a fun one to look at. Yeah.
I think another artist, a couple of artists of note, Jim Lee for me was one of the big cover artists, certainly of my comic reading life. I mean, the X-Men covers, the X-Men number one, which was just one giant piece. You know, how many people picked up 7 copies of X-Men just to get the whole bit?
You know what, I was a bit stupid and I didn't understand what variant covers were at the time, and I thought they were different parts of the first issue story.
I can understand that because it wasn't supremely clear. I mean, it was a brilliant idea, and it was certainly it was a brilliant piece
financially.
Just a little bit. And I know certainly he was around that period, like some of his X-Men covers before then and after. There's like Wolverine fighting Omega Red, and I always thought that his covers benefited more when they were dynamic, when like there was action happening, when you saw the middle of a fight. So it was something to do with the comic book.
Yeah.
Because there's one that I always saw that was just sort of Wolverine, it was in the forefront, and it's just a group of characters just stood there. And it's a bit lifeless. There's nothing really going on. I'm sure everyone probably knows this sort of cover I'm talking about. He's sort of holding his fist up so you can see his claws. But they all look like they're just waiting for a bus.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
But, you know, you have these amazing sort of covers of him. Usually Wolvie, when he was fighting, his mask was all completely ripped while he's fighting.
Yeah.
And it was the same with Alan Davis. did some amazing covers as well. His Excalibur covers.
Yeah.
Just some of my favourite things when I was a kid.
He's the one I was surprised at. There was only one cover of his in that collection I bought. Yeah, there's only one in there. And that was the Sabretooth Wolverine X-Men cover where they're fighting each other.
That's one of my favourite issues of all time.
Sort of close-up faces in there, almost.
When that issue, which is just them just absolutely ripping the tar out of each other. That was when Betsy Braddock wasn't Psylocke. She was Betsy Braddock, wasn't it? If I remember correctly.
Right, okay. Yeah. Is it? Oh, okay.
I think so. Because you had the classic sort of Sabretooth, you know, when he looked like he was from the 70s and he had like a furry scarf.
Yeah. When he was in this sort of Power Man and Iron Fist Sabretooth. Yeah. I like that one.
Yeah.
Love that fight. I've got a Batman cover to cover, and it does the greatest covers of the Dark Knight. And there's a great one. It's one of those old school ones that gives you kind of the proposition on the front, and you think, holy fuck, and you like buy me or something. And it's the Batman walking out the Batcave with Alfred in the background, and Batman saying, take your last look, Alfred, because after this I'm shutting the Batcave forever. And you look at that cover and think, holy fuck, and you'd have to find out what's in that story.
Another one, even though I was never a huge fan of his artwork, but I think Todd McFarlane was responsible for one of the most iconic Spider-Man covers, and that's saying something. You know, Spider-Man's had a bazillion amazing covers, but that Spider-Man number one where he's sort of sitting in all the webbing and stuff, how many times has that been stolen? Usually homage. By Tom
Love cover homages.
On Spawn covers.
I would have sent you a cover now for Batman number 31, and that's fucking awful. It's really bad.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, it's classic. Oh. Yeah, that. Oh my god, what's going on there? I think it's making me go a bit weird staring at that one.
It took a Batman cover to do that, did it? But
no, it happens most minutes.
There's another one here by Brian Boland, and it's Batman Gotham Knights 25, and it's just a shot of behind Batman, and his hands are in cuffs, and that's an absolutely great image. Again, pulling the reader in, doing what I should do.
Oh, Johnny Cannon on the Facebook group mentioned John Buscema, and I make him right on that. He's done some amazing covers.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, Silver Surfer one is still my grail issue. You know, one day I know I will obtain myself a copy of it, and I've got a big print of it on the wall in front of me here. But some of the covers he did for the Silver Surfer were incredible. That one where he's fighting Thor, he's going straight for Thor on the Rainbow Bridge.
Just incredible. Yes.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Such an eye to composition. You know, really amazing.
You had those classic sort of covers from the Marvel and DC, obviously, when we were growing up, from whatever era. But in terms of the truly iconic indie and the smaller publishers, not necessarily small press, but, you know, the independents and stuff like that, there's rarely hugely iconic covers. The last one, that I can think of that springs to mind is Walking Dead number one. I know...
That's one that's homaged, isn't it?
Yeah, homaged. Well. Yeah. But you rarely see that with many of the other sort of covers, do you really?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I think you have to go right back. You have to go to first comics. Mm. You know, some of the covers, the Badger Nexus covers, certainly a couple of the Grimjacks, maybe.
If we're the first image covers, like the Rob Liefeld, the Youngblood, stuff like that, that's been pastiche a bunch of times.
Image is a completely different kettle of fish now, though, isn't it? It's almost cinematic, almost like one shot sort of stories. Do you know what I mean? They're like seasons rather than these superhero characters. I find even something like Saga. Do you know what I mean? That will be. It almost feels like more like TV comics rather than superhero. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the Mage covers I found very iconic. The Matt Wagner ones.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They were really good.
Was it the Cerebus covers?
Oh yeah.
Cerebus God, yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, great covers, weren't they?
Bone has some of them just fantastic really... covers.
Yeah, Bones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Cerebus, some of them just ripping the piss.
Yeah. Right, and I think it's time for a poll. Let's get on a poll. It's late night. So the first one we said to our lovely listeners, in your overall opinion, do the comic book covers you find in the independents and small press match up to the larger publishers? Now we had four answers. First one was...
Surprise me.
Yeah. Yes. better even. Second one was some are good, some awful. Third was they're okay, and I rarely see a great one. Which do you think came out on top? I think it's fairly obvious.
Some are good, some are bad.
Yeah.
Is that what we're going for? I think
that went by a country mile. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a mile. I don't know if it's a country mile.
Okay.
Yes, that came out on top. So some are good, as some are awful. Came out on top with 59%. Understandable, really, because then everyone can vote for that one, and they've neither said something good or bad. It is. Yeah. Second was yes, better even. That had 27%. That one.
Wow. Right. Okay.
People a bit full of themselves, aren't they?
Third with 12% is I rarely see a great one. Made me a little bit sad. I think there's some great covers out there. And with only 3%, they're okay.
Aww.
Yeah. But this was certainly the topic where a lot of people were talking, they were having conversations amongst themselves, which is normally what happens on our polls. Like, they were talking about the special skill involved in designing a cover. I know certainly here, Gareth Hopkins and Robin Williams Scott, we're talking about that, and then Ken Reynolds got involved, and then Simon Russell got involved, and, you know, lions, tigers, bears. It was all over the shop. So, yeah, thank you to everyone who gets involved in all these. I mean, it was quite a long thread, so I can't read all of this out, and neither am I going to. But, yes, thank you for that. And I think that's fair enough, like, because in small press, not everything is going to be fantastic, even though...
No.
You know, we're huge supporters of it.
All the best will in the world. Yeah, you can't.
Do you know what I occasionally like in the small press is when someone homages a classic, I don't like a Kirby or a Ditko or a Joe Kubert cover. I kind of like that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of... Sometimes you find that a small press book will do a little corner ident with the faces of the characters in the top left-hand corner.
Ah, brilliant.
I like that. You know, that's so just a little bit of a sense of humour.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I did the Red Mass from Mars, I've gone for that Marvel, old school Marvel box in the top left corner.
Yeah, I like
that. With the picture of the character. Yeah. Just purely because that was what... those were the comics I read when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason that's there.
Let's face it, we buy a lot of comics because of nostalgia, don't we?
Yeah.
So it's not a bad sales technique, is it?
Yeah, true. We did another sort of last minute poll today. And we had a hell of a lot of votes on this, which is quite surprising. Now, the question here was, who do you think has produced the best comic book covers over the years?
Yeah, I was surprised by the result on this.
This is a collective. Obviously, it's quite a broad question. I don't want people picking it apart or whatever. It's just a general vote. So we had Marvel, DC, Image, and the independent / small press. I know some would argue that Image is an independent, but they're number three on the list
for
me.
Or a group of independents, I suppose, isn't it, in a way? Yeah. I'm going to go with Marvel because I'm a Marvel zombie, I suppose you call us now, don't you? I'm going to go with Marvel. Yeah, for me.
Dan? Yeah, I'd probably fall into the Marvel camp, but generally, kind of, I would say there's a spotted history of various companies producing absolute gems.
I think if you look back and look at like Kirby's Fantastic Four, Romita's Senior's Spider-Man, Buscema's Avengers, I don't think you could argue that the small press is better than that.
No.
To be honest with you.
I'd have a hard time saying that.
Yeah, and if you do argue that, I'll fight you.
Here's an interesting question. Who do you think was the worst out of that? Not the worst, but who do you think came last out of all that Marvel, DC, Image?
I reckon because I kind of know a lot of the people who vote, I'm going to say probably DC came last because they're kind of a bit uncool at the moment. You know,
I doubt if the small press on the small press podcast would say small press have got the worst covers.
I mean I would tend to say that DC have fairly uninspiring covers, and certainly have for the last last 5 years or so. There's not really I would say probably from the height of the Green Lantern period. Remember when Green Lantern was everything in DC? I think from that sort of period onwards, a lot of the sort of DC superhero line is fairly uninspiring. That's not to say you see some fantastic ones. I do see some absolutely amazing DC covers.
They've had a couple recently that I've got. I've literally gone, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, and we've sent a few out, haven't we? Nobody mentioned Green Lantern. Nobody mentioned it. But there have been a couple recently, and I've gone, oh, I've sort of show up and take a breath suddenly. But But it's the same with everyone, isn't it? Look, there's going to be some rubbish covers amongst it all. And there is, I think Marvel have had a couple recently that I think you can buy in the old rope section of the comic shop.
There's one series of Marvel
that we often talk about.
Not on the show. But there's a certain series that has a line of covers that if the artist is getting paid a pretty decent cover rate, he's done well.
He's doing well, yeah.
And if you can guess what it is, I will send you, the first person's right, and I will send you a prize.
Oh, is this turning into a competition?
Let's do it as a competition.
Yeah.
Well, there's a hint, they're very reminiscent of the old She-Hulk ones.
Yeah.
We'd be like her on the cover with nothing else, basically.
And we just must state, this is no actual indication of the actual comic itself or what happens inside.
Nope.
This is purely the covers that probably about 3 or 4 months in a row, we kept sending pictures and just going, is this it?
Yeah. How much did he get paid for this? That's like £100 per line.
Yeah.
That's some, if you can guess, I'll send you. I haven't decided what the prize will be yet, but you'll get a prize. There you go.
There you go. Anyway, this poll, in fourth place with 6%, was in fact DC.
Yeah.
So,
fucking hell.
Which surprised 6%. Me.
6%. Having a laugh, aren't they?
I know certainly, like, Dan Malia has stated to us that DC is probably a bigger seller for those guys.
Yeah, it's a big seller for his place, isn't it? Yeah.
I think in the UK, DC are a lot bigger than certainly I think they are. Do you know what I mean? I guess because I'm also a Marvel zombie.
I think that New 52, they really kind of came back strong. From what I've seen, at least. They seem to have done well off the back of that relaunch.
Yeah. Oh, the thing is now, you've got DC News Agent Comics as well as Marvel. I know you can buy DC now. Where historically, when we were growing up, it was difficult getting a DC comic, wasn't it? You know, it was always Marvel everywhere. Yeah.
It'd be like The Outsiders issue 23. You'd see randomly pop up. You're like, what?
So Jim Aparo, like his stuff. Yeah.
In third place, with 16%, is Marvel.
Oh, God's sake.
Get ready to fight a lot of people, Tony. In second place, with 25%, was Image. So out of all of the votes we had, 53% thought that independent and small press has produced the best comic book covers over the years. Now, I didn't say a specific decade. I meant in general. But I love the pride that everyone has in the independent small press.
The people good. In independent and small press are standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yes, I agree, mate. Nicely put. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I think you're right. And if it wasn't for these great groundbreaking artists, what would we have? And the artists on Image and, you know, and like Dark Horse and Boom, they'll all quote Marvel and DC artists, and a lot of them were or are Marvel or DC artists, you know.
And I will say, like, if you go into any of these big conventions, do you know what? I should have put 2000 AD in that list. Damn me!
I was just going to mention them actually. Yeah, just about to mention.
Damn me
them.
For not doing that. Yeah. But if you see any of these classic artists, please pop over to their table. Because if you're not fully aware, you know, if you're not uber fans of them, they'll probably have prints of some of their classic stuff, or they'll have copies of it, and you'll see there on that table why they're names that we all love.
So. Yeah, I was chatting to Alex Saviak at London last year, who is an amazing artist. Didn't have many people at his table, but if people knew what he'd done, they'd have been rushing over to see him. You know.
Well, I remember. Well, we managed to talk to Mike Zeck for a long time.
Oh God,
that was a fucking.
We're not sure we've ever mentioned that before.
Yeah. No, I know. We love it, but but also, like, when me and Dan Butcher managed to talk to Marv Wolfman for like five minutes, and probably I would hasten to say that a lot of people that went to that convention may not know who he is.
I know. Yeah. Fucking Team Titans, you know, all this stuff.
Didn't he do the whole Judas contract thing?
Yeah. Fucking
oh,
that's
God,
like
the stuff he did at Marvel, and oh my
that's
God,
that's like,
you know,
a linchpin in the kind of, that is the Teen Titans, which put the characters on the map, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If you quote a Teen Titans story, it's going to be that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that run of Teen Titans as well.
Is that a an animated movie now? Is
it? Yeah, they made an animated film out of that one.
Yeah, I wonder what that's like.
It's 50-50 with a lot of DC animated.
Yeah, I watched Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's a bit short, actually. It doesn't seem to be a very long movie. It's all right.
Isn't the Constantine character, that's the same voice as the guy in the TV show?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
He just won't leave that character alone, will he?
That Flashpoint one's fucking bleak. Have you watched that?
Yeah, that is bleak, yeah.
That's pretty bleak. Because I started watching that with my 7-year-old son. It's like, maybe not. Let's not watch this. It's a massive step up from Teen Titans Go to Flashpoint.
I think when it comes
to show him Dark Knight next.
Killing joke. Fucking hell.
Get over it. I was watching the Dark Knight. The guy who plays the lead mutant is one of the actors from Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, right, okay.
You know his breathless mate, Stevie. His dad. Yeah, plays the lead mutant in Batman Year One. I've got a real thing for voices. I can pick out voices. So I'll be watching animation and go, oh, that's Joe Bloggs.
Is that
whatever.
Your mutant power then, Dan?
Yeah, it comes in so handy.
Yep.
I watched The Killing Joke. Oh, my God. I don't want to be negative, but that is fucking a big pile of shite.
My wife won that on Blu-ray, and it's still in the fucking cellophane. I've not bothered watching it. Because I heard so much bad stuff about it. I'd spit it forward.
I felt a bit sleazy when he did Batgirl on the roof.
Yeah, you need to, seriously, if you want to watch that, skip forward 40 minutes. Seriously.
Yeah, it's almost like two movies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like two things, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Back to
covers. The Hobbit films. Oh. So this is putting a load of shit that didn't happen in the books.
Oh.
Surprise, surprise, no one likes that bit. Then the bits that did happen in the books, everyone loves that bit.
Yeah. God. You're really bumming us out, Dan.
How many times have you got to go into that fucking roundabout? Like, don't try and update classics for your own interpretation.
Oh, that's been amusing us this week as well, isn't it? The fact the Americans say, I'm feeling really bummed, is a whole different thing in America.
Yeah,
that's quite good. Yeah.
There's another story I'll tell you off air. back to comic covers, though. I really feel that, like, the classic era, certainly that you're talking about, Tony, you know, when you had you had the big speech bubbles and you had, like, the fights and stuff. That's certainly, I think, coming back in a way.
It is, I think, certainly
with more like the independents and stuff. You know, they're wearing their influences on their sleeves, aren't they?
Yeah.
The I think speech bubbles are coming back on covers as well. I understand. I'm not sure if this is true, but I think I heard on a podcast once that it was an editorial dictate at Marvel that there was no more speech bubbles on covers.
Right. Okay.
I kind of liked it. I kind of liked, you know. Mm. Where are you going, Spider-Man? Don't go out into space or something like that. You know, it's a like sort of thing. Yeah.
I really hope there's urgency. You just sounded like you were telling someone not to get in the shops.
Here's a packet of Monster Munch, Spider-Man.
Small press wise, though, that when you've got that kind of a cover image, that's also going to be used as promotional image elsewhere. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of got to think with your marketing head. So maybe if you're putting speech bubbles on it, where you're reproducing that elsewhere, it might not work.
Is it going to be a poster in a shop? Is it going to be a postcard? You know, it's this sort of thing as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know,
because if you've got limited funds to pay for that image, or you've got to make that image yourself, and
it's coming back. I think the balloon, certainly, and that fight on the cover thing is coming back. I think, you know, as much as I quite like Alex Ross's stuff, but I'm getting a bit bored of just his sort of iconic covers. You know, I think we're done. Let's move on for a bit.
I think everyone has their Alex Ross period, don't they? I think.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think mine was the Kingdom Come sort of era.
Yeah, it's great. Marvel's I really liked as well. That's really good stuff. But okay, let's, you know, there's a variety as the spice of life. Let's get something else on now, you know.
Yeah.
But talking about 2000 AD did some great covers as well, didn't they?
Oh god, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They were
another one that certainly, I think, the early days were more story orientated than they are now. I know that there's the covers still tie in to what's happening in the book, but maybe not as strong as it used to be.
I know that even the 2000 AD Facebook page puts out like a cover, every couple of covers every week, doesn't it?
Well, the classic,
you know, like old covers.
Yeah, I love it. Love it when they do that.
Yeah. I mean, I know Simon Russell put it, and I was about to do it myself, was 2000 AD 167, which is the Terror Tube one, which is almost, it's also got like a redesigned 2000 AD thing on it, just to sort of, just to fit in with the artwork on the cover.
Yeah.
And that's Kevin O'Neill thing. That's beautiful. I really like that. Mm. You know. But there is some classic ones, you know, and it just the Cursed Earth stuff, Emerald Isle with the Steve Dillon, you know, where he's got Dread back to back with an Irish judge who's drinking a pint of Guinness. Yeah, I love that cover as well. That's really good. Yeah.
Now a lot of the 2000 AD stuff is very sort of painterly, isn't it? It's very sort of either digital.
It is
or
now,
acrylics.
Isn't it? Yeah. It is now. Your Next Punk, that was a great one. You know, the 2000 AD when it joined with Tornado. Some amazing covers. You know, real ones that, you know, still stick out now. I think there is, if I can find it, there's a YouTube video that is basically a picture of every cover, sort of gives you enough time to look at it, and then it moves on to the next one. And you can sit there with it.
Really?
While you're working, where you're at work, you can sit and it runs for about sort of 20 minutes, you know, because it does all the sort of classic and the annuals and all that sort of thing as well. And it's really good, really worth looking at. Yeah, sort of real, it really brings back some memories, you know. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Were you about to say something, Dan?
No.
Oh. You're on a podcast, man. You're supposed to talk.
Oh shit, yeah, of course. Yeah. No, I just feel like kind of there were a few 2000 AD covers I can remember buying back in the day that were a bit of a miss, because it was just, I don't know, kind of wasn't really that jazzed by them. But then again, you get ones, I like the classic older ones. I think the period when I started reading it quite heavily was in the sort of late 90s, and I think that was the period where it started to move. It was moving into, like, it didn't know what it was doing with itself. Would that be correct?
I think even big fans will accept that there was a few little periods there which were quite difficult to get through.
Yeah.
You know. But like you say, even like covers by Ian Gibson and Dave Gibbons and, you know, Bolland, and just the absolute classics, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was weird because I put up in the Facebook group some of the old Transformers covers for the UK.
Yeah.
And I didn't know the artists at all at the time. And then one of the two that I really loved was one by Dave Gibbons.
Oh, of course it was.
I was like, that, at the time, I remember, this is such a great kind of paired back cover. It's a picture of Death's Head holding an axe above Rodimus Prime.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he's going to say, but it's just really well done. And I was always great as a kid. Really good.
I mean, we did have the 80s and 90s did have some great covers, some great comics, not just 2000 AD, but you had Deadline, you know, where they sort of mixed up the sort of music covers as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then you had some great ones on Crisis, and Toxic had some great ones.
Toxic had some great ones.
Yeah, there have been some really good ones.
I said, one I struggle with is a Martial Law cover that really sticks out. I can't think of one.
I think a lot of the Martial Law covers are such an onslaught to the senses, aren't they? They're so full on, or the character's just, I mean, the character's quite an in-your-face character anyway, isn't it? It's normally him front and centre.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them is because they've been collected in other editions that they rarely had their own. Obviously, you had the trade for Martial Law, Fear and Loathing, and
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not saying you can't do covers, because reading covers, excellent.
Yeah.
Gil Kane, another great cover artist. I just love some of his Action Comics and Superman covers. Just incredible stuff. It would be remiss of us not to mention Romita Sr. and his amazing Spider-Man stuff. And then one that you two probably like would be Barry Windsor-Smith and his Marvel X-Men covers.
I grew on Barry Windsor-Smith because I didn't, certainly around that sort of Weapon X era, I wasn't a fan of him. It wasn't until later that I grew to like Barry Windsor-Smith.
Was that sort of Archer and Armstrong period, or?
Yeah.
One cover artist that we talk about quite often who courts obscene amounts of controversy is Cho.
Frank, the man
Frank Cho,
show.
Yes.
No matter what people think of him, I love him. I love him.
Yeah. One thing that there was recently regarding the covering is the Wonder Woman one. And did you hear about this? He drew a picture of Wonder Woman. She's kind of like side on, deflecting a bullet off one of her bracelets. And she had a part of her panty showing like underneath, like the skirt flaring up. And editorial didn't like it. So what they did was they kind of did a crop, a harsher in crop, where you don't see the panty. It cuts off before then. But then they kind of shot themselves in the foot because it alluded to the fact that, well, she's wearing underwear in this one. And when you've done a tighter in crop, it's removed the underwear. So you're seeing just the flash of leg under the dress, but there's no underwear.
That also led to him stepping away, because he was scheduled to do a whole load of variants, wasn't he? And he stepped away from the gig after that, if I remember correctly.
Right. I can understand that to a point. If someone's paying you money to do something for a cover and you've agreed to do that, you do that. I honestly, maybe it's different if you kind of got the you feel you're an artist or whatever.
Yeah.
But I consider myself a commercial artist, and I do that in part time. And if someone says, "I want that to be luminous green," you're getting it as luminous green.
Yeah.
I don't care if it.
If it's work for hire, isn't it? Once you've done it, it's sort of like, well, it's theirs now.
Yeah, it's yours. It's not.
Yeah.
I know that can be kind of like difficult to choke down when you produce something. You think, "Oh God, that I could do so much better than that for them." But if they don't want that, they don't want that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few covers that have caught a controversy, and there was the Spider-Woman one by who's the French artist?
Manara.
Yeah, Manara. And then the recent one has been the Vampirella one, isn't there?
Which one was that?
It's the one where Jimmy Broxton had done the Vampirella cover, and it's a sort of a sort of leather-clad, sexy German woman, she was a he. I found out the hard way. And there was all kinds of amazing controversy, but it was an homage cover.
If you look back at the source material, and it's absolutely on point for what it was doing, and it's mocking these things and like taking a piss a bit, and for people
it's mocking
not
like
to see...
she-wolf for the SS and all that sort of thing, isn't it?
If you can't understand that, I honestly, your life must be so difficult. Going with the world with that kind
of
world.
Also, if you're obsessed with such a petty thing, then I've got to tell you, you need to go out of your house sometimes. And I know the writer Paul Cornell, and said he wasn't working with him again, and Bleeding Cool ran about 83 articles on it and all this sort of thing, and it just wasn't necessary.
No,
it's just nonsense.
Yeah,
you know?
I said this during the week about people having to go at the Cap writer, and just saying, I can't be agreeing with that. And someone goes, "Well, what's your point?" I said, "My point is not attacking someone on social media for something they've created, like a work of fiction that's there's no real bearing in the world. If you're writing a comic book and he's getting fucking death threats and shit like that, it's just so out of bounds."
It's ridiculous. It's an absolutely ridiculous situation. I mean, the things that are going on in the world that need attention, this is not one of them. Do you know what I mean?
If
you don't read it, just don't read it. Fuck off.
I honestly find it really frustrating at times, because I just feel like I'm going mad at times. That I can't believe people react in this way to things.
But
this is why we take social media breaks. This is why it's healthy to take social media breaks, because it becomes this sort of who can be the most outraged the quickest fucking competitions, isn't it? That's the only reason these things people go on about it is a look at me. Don't you do with the fact that Captain Nazi, who gives a fuck?
With like this particular issue, it's an example of one of those. I've stepped away from all of that nonsense, and I come back, I hear a little bit about it, so these guys have to fill me in. And once I've heard about it, I'm like, are you being serious? You know, this is ridiculous. I don't know, people. Everyone wants to be the person that's being noticed, and
exactly.
It's ridiculous.
I try and move away from that stuff, and then I thought to myself, I don't want to be that person who's ignorant and just kind of filling my life full of pretty pictures and nonsense. And I feel like I should dip in and out. And when I do, it's like, oh fucking, I really regret doing that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's like. In the grand
scheme, it's like reading the comments on a YouTube video. You realise that there are people out there who are that stupid.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So sometimes we get. I mean, we're in our own little. You know, I'm just looking at our Facebook group. Everyone on there has a reasonable and sensible thing to say.
Yeah.
And then you go outside of that, and you realise what a bunch of James Hunts there are in the world outside that. You know.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a very different way world that creators live in now than did 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Where they kind of.
You've got to admire these people who don't bite on it. You've got to admire these people who just go, whatever.
Yeah.
You know. When I got a bit of it recently with that cosplay thing, and I just thought, I'm not really going to reply to anything, and I didn't. And it's much a happier place to be. Otherwise, you just spend your life tapping away on your phone when you're sitting at a bus stop.
You're either getting some real sort of hateful arguments, or, you know, it's just really hurtful, you know. It's so easy to hurt someone these days online. Makes me sad.
What gets me is the fact that if I was a professional doing comic book work, I would not express a political opinion. I wouldn't have any opinion whatsoever, apart from just like, this is the work I do. And
I wouldn't express it to the people who are reading my book. I would express it to my proper friends and people I know, and I wouldn't go online and talk about it. I think you've got to draw that line sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah. And if your goal is to work for one of the big two, just be prepared that, you know, we are not in a world now where comic book artists and writers are in their little caves. Do you know what I mean? No one knows what they look like or etc. It's almost like being a musician or being an actor. As soon as you hit the big time, you're more visible and therefore have a target on your back.
Yeah.
And also, let's face it, it works in reverse. A lot of the people who are just like going at these creators, you know, and writing these like outrageous statements about, you know, comics, are people who we all three of us know, want to work in for that company.
Yeah.
So what are they doing? Thinking, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't want to live in a world where I just don't want to live in this world. This is the last time.
That.
No, of course not. But for instance, if I did a Marvel comic, never going to happen. But one day, if I did a Marvel comic, for instance, I've always wanted to write a Wrecking Crew story. So just say I do a 4-issue series, and one of the things in my story, I don't know, just to prove that they're going to be a bit more A-list, I'm going to kill off a minor Marvel character. Not one of the major ones. I'm just going to kill someone. Try a bit of permadeath, at least for 6 months. It all works because of the story, but you know, like in this day and age, if that happens, you're immediately going to get shit for it, aren't you? You know?
No matter who that character is. Pretending that their life are ending because they happen to like a character that was in two comics in 1978.
Yeah.
The worst thing as well, you don't see too much of this, but it does happen, is when you get an artist who just gets head down, does the job, and then someone will call them out for not speaking up against what they see going on in a company. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. So like someone who's not involved in a company. And I say, this is horrible going on at DC or Marvel. Why aren't you, Joe Bloggs, an artist there, saying anything? So, well, what the fuck? He's doing a job there. He doesn't know the ins and outs of everything that's happening at the company. It's a ridiculous thing to do.
It's different if people know that these artists are hanging around with these people and they see it in their face. But like you say, all of these artists, most of the time, they're chained to their desks because they're working from home and chained.
I mean, someone could be literally on the other side of the world, and you're talking about the company practices. What company? I'm going to get an email once a week.
I'm a freelance. I can't get on the editor today. What are you talking about?
We don't have to worry about
that. We almost went off topic there.
Don't have to worry about that too much in the small press scene, do we?
No.
And the indie scene. You know. So we love you all, you wonderful, positive people. Who aren't burning your comics, because that's just stupid.
Yeah, don't burn your comics. We'll look like shit, Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Is there any other cover artists you wanted to mention, or any other covers you wanted to sort of cover?
I would like to give an honourable mention. When I was speaking to my mate Dan Chan, I said we were going to be talking about covers this week, and he immediately sent me a cover that I thought, amazing. And it was Animal Man. I believe it was the Brian Bolland covers.
I put one of them on the group, the one with him being run over.
The one I saw, yeah, that was a classic. The one he sent me was Animal Man lying on his back and there's an artist painting it.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah. I think that's the one with the tracks as well, isn't it? That's the one he's almost lying in the snow on a snowy ground.
It's not snowy, it's just hasn't been coloured in. It's all the background sort of pencil. Yeah.
Also like the one where he's reaching out the panel and is he tapping the writer on the shoulder or something like that?
Because those covers, they broke the wall, didn't they? It was just sort of so brilliant that could only work with that series, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it was that meta thing, wasn't it? That, you know, which wasn't done that much back then, you know, he's stepping out and speaking to the writer and, you know, the reader and all that sort of thing. It was, that's a brilliant series. I reread that a couple of years ago and still love it. Really good. Yeah.
I don't think too many of the listeners might not have seen your covers, Vince, for the fiction books you've done. But we saw them recently, and they're really well done. They're excellent.
Oh, thank you.
They're really good.
Yeah. I just love just cover work in general, just even like doing prose work. I like you say, even if it's just text, it's got to represent kind of what's going inside in terms of theme. You've got to think about fonts and colours, and everything works into it, you know, because certainly you walk into a Waterstones, you pick up any novel. There's probably a lot of books, the cover's got nothing to do with what's inside.
Yeah.
And especially on crime novels, I find at the moment. Yeah. It's always some sort of dark street or something, isn't it? Yeah.
There's one book I've got here, I reread it recently, The Stars My Destination.
Oh, yeah, Alfred Weston.
Yeah, so when the guy gets angry, the tattoo on his head, he's got like a tattoo that's covered by like kind of like fake skin, it kind of flares up so you can read it, and it says Nomad. And on the cover artwork, they flipped the artwork. So it's like Nomad in reverse.
Oh, right.
Oh, God.
Sack that designer.
Oh, dear God. I mean, with stuff like that, I compare it to movie posters. Do you know what I mean? It's got to work almost like a poster-like image.
Yeah.
You know, something you could quite easily hang on your wall, or you go walk past in a bookstore and go, oh, that looks awesome, you know. So I like to create taglines and stuff as well, but that's because I'm obsessed with movie posters in general anyway.
It's weird because they say about, like, you don't judge a book by its cover, but with a comic, that cannot be said.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I certainly hope that people don't judge my comic too
much. Well, kind of, it goes for me with the Vanguard ones. I've got the title running down the right-hand side because I thought that looks pretty funky. Hmm. But obviously, if that ever went on a shelf on a comic shop and you can see the top bit, you're going to see fuck all.
We're fighting the system.
Yeah. Sorry, you got to reorganize your shelves. What do you mean?
Fuck so, you.
It doesn't work for my comic.
Reorganize your lives, you losers. Anyway,
all up reorganize your face for you.
Some fucking comics.
Can I give a couple of mentions then? Yeah, I'm going to do Nicholas Viscardi, old school DC, did a lot of Teen Titans, Aquaman, Batlash, Action Comics. Just absolute class. Look, do yourself a favour and look up his covers. I know they got mentioned in the group chat. And also Jim Aparo. I love his covers. The Brave and the Bold stuff he did, Aquaman, Detective Comics, Outsiders, and especially the Spectre ones, which are really good, really excellent. And last one, Norm Brayfogle, also got mentioned on the group, his Batman stuff, which he did for a long time with Alan Grant and doesn't get enough credit for how good those series were. Just great, great, brilliant stuff.
Awesome.
I think it's been a successful comic book cover chat, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Just imagine if we had a guest, this could have gone on all evening.
Yeah. It really got me thinking around the digital thing. I'd never considered that, but that's a really good point, Dan, about resizing and reformatting, you know, and thinking about the smaller image on the screen. You know, it really does make an impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's the size difference is vast.
Yeah.
So the decisions you got to make design-wise are very different.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So
cool.
So hopefully you've learned some things. Hopefully you've enjoyed our walk down memory lane. one cover that I haven't mentioned on the show that I did mention to these guys earlier was one of my favourite covers when I was a kid. It was a Punisher Weekly cover where it just said, what's the last thing to go through a criminal's brain? And it was the Punisher holding a bullet the size of his hand.
Absolute class. Yeah. Which we were going to try and start some sort of fake outrage on Twitter to see if we could get it going before we pointed out what a bunch of idiots they were.
If there was ever an example of something you could never do in this day and age, it would be that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the bullet pretty much left of the guy's head.
That, yeah, I know, it's a huge thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Tank round.
What I love about this is the message is the strongest thing, but Dan Butcher's immediately thinking, well, that's just not realistic. The bullet would absolutely just destroy his head.
See, that shows what different people are. You think, oh, that'd be outrageous. Dan thinks about the size of the bullet, and all I can think of is it looks a bit like a dildo.
We shall post this cover on the Facebook group just so you can see just how good it is. It's amazing. Yeah. So, there will be. I think there's more than enough to talk about. We've got plenty more to talk about. And when it comes
to this
topic,
another one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I reckon.
And we haven't even got onto the bad covers out there. So that'd be feisty. Yeah, we'll have one of those in the future. That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
But until then, do we have any shout outs?
Yeah, I've got a shitload if you don't mind.
Oh god, here we go. Strap in.
Okay. Here we go. Human beings are literally, if you heard a bleep on my computer, it's because it just got funded. Human beings after 6 hours, brilliant news. Issue 2 went up 6 hours ago, so it went up Sunday lunchtime, and it's been funded. But I'll tell you what, it is brilliant. The first issue blew my mind, and second issue, you need to get on this. It was getting funded by 6 hours. This is going to be a huge deal, so get on that. Stuart McCune on Kickstarter. Last shout out for the comic pop-up, which is the 13th of May between 12 and 5 at the Hanover Pub, 242 Queens Road, Brighton. Organised in a big chief part by Simon Russell, our friend, and it's a great little part. There's an art festival going on in Brighton, so head along to the Hanover Pub, and Simon will sell your comic without a fee if you've got any comics that need selling. And it's a great little sort of get together, all ages get together for comic fans and stuff like that in Brighton. The 20th of May at Calamity Comics in Hatfield, which is a newish shop which you might have heard me talk about a few months ago, is at 44 White Lion Square in Hatfield. And on that date, the 20th, which I think is a Saturday from memory, Mark Lamming, Cam Smith and Chris Wild Goose. So at least I got one good guest. Do you know what I mean? We'll be doing a signing. That is going to be cracking. And if you know Lambo and Wild Goose, you know that it will be just a piss-taking fest. I've never met Cam actually before, but I hope he's up for a laugh. And that's going to be good. And also, I think it's tomorrow, is Mr. Lamming's birthday, so happy birthday, Lambo.
Well, on this day, on this particular day that this launches.
Oh, is it? I think it is. I think, or is it Tuesday? I can't remember. Top of my head, but I'll get my birthday present today.
Either way, so happy birthday, Mark.
Yes. There you go.
There you go.
I think that's all I've got. Yeah, that's all for me at the moment, dude. There you go.
There you go. Do you have any, Dan?
No.
Me neither. So... as always, me and Dan will think of probably about two or three each once we've finished recording.
Yeah.
but for now, let's talk about some great books that you need to check out. Let's roll these out like a mother. Who wants to go first?
Go on, someone else go first.
I'll go first, shall I?
Go on, Dan.
Yeah.
We've got sent this in, all of us, from Matt Garvey. Ether.
Oh, yeah, I've read this.
Issue 1. Yeah.
Yes.
Lab Rat Comics.
Speaking of covers, that's got a really cool cover.
That's a really nice cover. Yeah. The artist, I'm really sorry, I'm going to murder your name. Dizarez, is that correct?
Dizarez.
Yeah.
Dizarez.
I thought you were having a stroke as you said it, Dan.
Dizarez. I was having a stroke.
put the webcam on.
Talking of covers, this is absolutely fantastic. He's got the titular character standing in front of the City of London map, which is also kind of the character's mask. You don't realise how hard I'm treading around spoiler territory here. I can't very, very careful the way I speak, because there's some great little touches in the comic that if I use the wrong words I might muck it up, so I'm not going to. But essentially it's very much kind of like a British Batman, but very dark. It's dealing with some real kind of harsh, nasty crimes involving children and the abduction of children. And the character in question, Yita, comes along to the crime scene and starts getting involved and trying to track down who and what's happening with this crime. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's an excellent comic. And Matt, he's done Cordelia Swift Transfer and Chunks. And this is a very much a departure away from that, where that stuff was a little lighter, especially Chunks. This is very dark and very kind of...
It's very raw, Shacky, isn't he? To start, it certainly starts out that way.
Yeah, he kind of... Yeah. Give it plays stuff, and then yeah, and then it kind of changes a little bit later, without going too much into it. One of the absolute the writing's fantastic, but the absolute one of the standout features for this is the artwork, which I found incredible. I was absolutely blown away by it. It's really good. It's kind of like a painterly style, and sometimes it kind of it's almost photographic. It's but not. Kind of hard to describe.
Yeah,
the kind of the angles that have been chosen, it looks like a kind of film or a camera shot of a scene, but it's just so well done, so well rendered. Very dark in places with kind of like harsh illumination. Overall, the tone, yeah, very in keeping with the story, and it very much like a story set in London and playing out in London. All night shots. I was hard to recommend it. Not recommend it, essentially. You can get it for £3 from Matt's Big Cartel store, which I'll put the link up in the show notes. And I think there's a couple going out to various retailers, but I'm not too sure what those retailers will be.
Okay.
I think it's Gosh, Orbital, and maybe a couple of others. But if you get in touch with Matt on Twitter, which is... does anyone know Matt's Twitter?
I can look it up while we're talking. Keep going, dude. Yeah.
Give Matt a shout on Twitter. He's a bit backward about talking about his comics on his Twitter account.
Matt Garvey, 1981. So that's obviously 20 years after he was born. Yeah.
So if you can try and coax out of him where he gets where he sells his comics, yeah, I'm sure we'll. So yeah, get that one out.
He is a softly spoken gent.
Yeah.
Love you, Matt. Love you.
Not one promotion, Matt. So it's good.
Yeah. By the trade of Cordelia Swift, because I wrote the intro to it about him being a junky prostitute lover, which I found quite amusing.
Nice.
I think he did too.
That's worth it. That's worth it for that alone. Right. My pick for this week, my recommendation, is from a couple of gents who. I would say they're one of the bigger stars on the indie sort of, certainly on the convention scene at the moment. It's the Etherington brothers, who I think we're at a period now where most people listening to this show will know of them.
Right.
And they're super energetic, and their positivity is exhausting. And I mean that in a really nice way.
Politician this episode.
And they're great guys, but beyond that, their work is amazing. And I had a chance to pick up one of their books that was collected from the Phoenix. And we've talked about Phoenix many times on this show, but it was the first volume of... Someone's going to laugh at me for saying this. Right. Long Gone Don.
Yep.
Oh, I'm so glad I said that right.
That is not a porn film.
No. It could be. But the book one is The Monstrous Underworld. I don't know if you guys have... anyone out there has read this. But this is... it's such a high-quality book. It's basically about a 10-year-old kid called Don Skelton who dies and then goes to the underworld of Broiler Doom. And then he just goes... massive adventures with crazy monsters... just crazy things happening all over the shop. The book actually starts with a death. It's not a spoiler to say, because it's set in the afterlife, the character needs to get there. And so at the beginning, it tells the story of, while he was having his school dinner of oxtail soup, a ladder hit him on the head, knocked him out cold, and then he drowned in his bowl of soup. So, immediately... and that's where the strangeness begins, because you would think, oh, the character's dead. But then he wakes up in the afterlife with white hair and a talking... Is it a... What is it? Is it a raven or something like that? I can't remember what it is now. But these books are pretty special. I've been wanting to get my hands on like their work for a while, and you can get these in bookstores. I think I picked this up from Waterstones, and it was like $6.99 for the first book. Nice. quite a few issues in there. They're great for kids. Yep. Great all ages comics. But just looking at it, it just blew me away. It feels very European. Looking at it, I was reminded of the old Asterix books I used to read when I was a kid at primary school.
Yeah.
You know, when you had all those panels, there was lots of dialogue, but the artwork was just so beautifully detailed and rendered. They put so much detail into every page. The lettering is absolutely spot on. I think they're a cut above. In terms of the work they do, and it's nice that they're actually really nice guys. But so I'll be picking up lots more volumes of their books, of which Long Gone Don, oh god, I've made it difficult for myself to say that, haven't I, is only one of them, because they have like puzzle books like Von Dugan. And another reason for recommending these is these are just great to get kids into comic books as well, stuff like this. Which reminds me of it was Free Comic Book Day recently, and who was it on our Facebook group that posted a picture of their kids reading their first comics for the first time?
I can't remember now. It's on it got a lot of nice reactions, didn't it, because it's rightly so, someone said this is what it's all about.
Because we may talk about all the stuff we liked when we were kids, and you know, you're talking about these modern dark comics, but if you're not getting kids into the comics now,
yeah,
what will the future be like for this? You know, that you can't have a bunch of cantankerous bastards like us.
The Simon Robbins.
Yes, Simon. Simon. Thank you very much for posting that picture. Because if anything, just that picture was just inspiring. Because you're just like, that's proper. What it's all about. Yeah,
brings it all back home, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're going to take a message away from the book, the other brothers' book that Vince just mentioned, it's if you eat meat, you're going to hell.
Oh dear, save me a nice seat in hell, people.
Oxtail soup.
Yeah, I don't like oxtail soup though.
I don't eat meat and fish,
I don't like minestrone either. Dan, how do you feel about minestrone?
Not a fan.
No.
I just like plain tomato soup. I quite like that.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Can I go wrong with that?
Yeah, it's alright.
A nice crusty bread roll, beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I've weekly seen the virtues of Waitrose. Their own brand soups are fucking horrible.
What is it?
Because I like my soups to have like a vague synthetic quality, like Heinz. I don't want it to be full of all that vegetable rubbish.
Yeah,
I like soups to be the sort of ones they'll discover in The Walking Dead in 300 years.
Yeah, they'll be fine. That soup.
Yeah. Yin-yang yonky nonsense.
So, that was Soup Talk with the Awesome Comic Podcast. Join us next week when we talk about brioche. No. But back to Long Gone Don. If you see it, definitely pick it up, especially if you've got kids and you want to introduce them into some real fun books. Because one of the things I like about The Phoenix is a great like weekly comic that has several... You know, it's got several ongoing stories going out throughout it, but then they really put effort into their collections, and they're just real nice looking books that just look nice on the shelves, and yeah, it's just great stuff. So definitely pick up Long Gone Don.
Hey.
It rolls off the tongue after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So there you go. Speaking of rolling off the tongue, Tony.
Yeah, I'm going to do a book called A Castle in England.
Ooh.
It's written by Jamie Rhodes, and it has a number of illustrators: Isaac Lenkowitz, Bryony May Smith, William Exley, Becky Palmer, and Isabel Greenberg. So a few people there that we've mentioned before. And it's a hardback anthology, in a way, I suppose. Plunge into the rich and often dark history of Scotney Castle in Kent, a place that has witnessed the rule of more than 30 monarchs and has been home to generations of different families, each with their own stories to tell. Now, that makes it sound a bit sort of heavily historical, if you see what I'm saying, and there is a huge historical element to it, and it is a book that has been like very, very sort of richly researched, and each chapter is written by Jamie Rhodes, but it's illustrated by a different artist, and each one deals with a different era. It starts in 1381, the medieval era with the Peasants' Revolt, and it ends up I think in the Edwardian era with by Isabel Greenberg. yeah, Edwardian era, the Age of Empire, 1907. But what it does is it touches quite cleverly on the fact that things ain't so different, you know. One chapter has got, the first chapter is about the, you know, the everyone's revolting because they're being treated so badly, they're being taxed so heavily, you know. There's a little bit of a dose of reality as to what we're feeling now. You know, the government are coming to them, or the monarchy in their case, are coming to them and getting more and more money. They're taxing them more and more heavily, and the workers' rights are being ignored. And he plays on that a little bit. It's quite clever like that. It's one of these two-colour books, a bit like The Hunter and the Richard Stark books that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's got that sort of two-colour quality, if you see what I mean, Sven. Do you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's mostly orange and white, a little bit of brown and white towards the end. But it's really clever, and whilst it is this sort of microcosm of Kent, it does reflect the larger world at the time and the lessons that we should learn from history, and that's where he's going with it. Each chapter begins with a sort of, is it genealogical charts, you know, where they show who your parents were and where you come from and all that sort of thing. Each chapter starts with that, and then it's a little bit of a sort of story. The first one I think is probably my favourite, by Isaac Lenkiewicz. It's a 14-year-old boy, King Richard II of the House of Plantagenet rules the Kingdom of England. To pay the costly war of France, his advisors have been imposing sustainable, unsustainable taxes on the already impoverished population of unfree serfs. And then that's the introduction, but then it concentrates on one family and how they, you know, they're being taxed and how they're trying to steal money and what happens to them. And it's really beautifully told, really, really lovely. 142 pages, $14.99, the two-colour treatment. Hardback book from Nobra again, and I think Nobra's sticking out a few books at the moment because we've got the run up to LCAF next month, which is obviously their big push every year and something I'll be attending. I know a lot of the listeners are going along to it, but really, really beautifully rendered stuff. I highly recommend it, and I think it comes out today, so as we go live Monday, comes out Monday. Really good stuff. There you go, that's my one.
Nice.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, that's quite a varied group of books for you all to check out.
Yeah.
And it has been a hell of a fun show. But did you think I've it was fun? Oh, Dan.
Quick shout-out. Sorry.
Oh, hang on. Right, yeah, you missed your spot. Oh, now it's a shout-out, is it? Right, you had your chance.
A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the Gods of Men comic book.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah. It's now been made free. I've put the link on the Awesome Comic Chat page. Go and check it out. Great. You can buy physical copies, but the digital copy is free.
Okay, cool. Can I give a little shout out to Orbital yesterday?
Go for it.
I was working yesterday. I legged it out of work to Free Comic Book Day, and they stormed it. Absolutely brilliant. Really good. And then I legged it up to Gosh very quickly, and Gosh had the longest queue I've ever seen at a comic shop for Free Comic Book Day. It's incredible. And good to see so many people actually picking books up and buying books in both the shops. Yeah, grand stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
There you go.
Because that's what it's all about. Free Comic Book Day is great, but hopefully you're buying stuff at the same time as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. There's several different ways you can let us know about anything we spoke about. Maybe we got something wrong. We occasionally do, very rarely, because we're amazing.
All the time.
All the time. If we did get something wrong, let us know on awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Also, we're still accepting submissions to the awesome pod. What is it? Is it Jam Piece? What are we calling
it? Yes, the Jam Piece,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. We want your small press characters. We want them jumping in the air. We want them happy. Well, they don't have to be happy. They could be horrible. And we're going to put them all
sexy.
Together. Yeah, we want them sexy. We want them aggressive. Yeah.
We've done really well, but it's a little starting to trickle down now, so we'll give it another big push this week.
Yeah.
Try and get a few more in.
Yeah. Good. So, and very soon we'll probably be showing you some fruits of our labours. So, if you want to send any of your characters our way, send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Like us on the old Twitters. Yes, follow us on @theawesomepod, where we'll be revealing next week's guest. We are getting another guest on. It's always lovely when it's just the three of us, but I just need someone else to balance out the madness sometimes. Yep. and we've got some great guests coming on soon, so like us there, and also on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and please join the group that we've been talking about so much on this episode, Awesome Comics Talk, because there's so much great comic book discussion, and it's all positive, and there's lots of creative talk as well. And it's just fantastic to see. We look, do you know what? It's, I'm going to say it. I'm not really a Facebook person. I honestly think that group has now become my favourite thing about Facebook. I just read
it. Yeah, definitely. I think you too. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Just
yeah. Yeah. And that's got nothing to do with us because we just set up the page. It's you people that actually make it the awesome page that it is. So thank you very much for getting involved. Yeah. Thank you for listening to us, whether it is on Podbean, awesomecomics.podbean.com. Or if you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a nice review. That always helps get the word out. Likewise, if you listen to us on the Stitcher Network or the Podnose Network, wherever you listen to us, we just love you. We appreciate you. You know, people like to be appreciated. Yeah, we sure do.
Yeah.
There you go. Dan the Man Butcher said it. There you go.
Yeah. And there was a chap who contacted us about doing an American version of this. So if you're an American, as it is.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's I don't know good. If they're still going. That was ages ago.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
If you go to Ezohyz, which is what I am on Twitter, you'll see my usual ramblings and Bronze Age photographs of Bronze Age comics. But you'll also see I'll be retweeting Nick Prolix, who does The Sheep and the Wolves, which is he and I are working on a secret project. So have a look at some of the stuff we're retweeting at the moment. Absolutely gorgeous. He is absolutely killing it.
Looks
very excited about that.
More about that in a few weeks.
Yeah. Oh, we've got so much to tell you, lovely people. You have no idea.
Yeah. What is this? Number 97, is it? 97?
97.
Three more weeks to go.
Fucking hell, yeah.
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 The big 100.
Yeah.
Should we have a big conversation on that one?
Should we all get drunk for the 100th?
Oh, I like that idea.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. It'd just take me half a shandy, and I'll be anyway.
More toilet breaks for me.
But this time I won't edit them out.
Yeah. That's me, dude.
Yeah. Just keep a large bottle of Sunny D.
Oh, my
empty,
God.
Obviously.
Nice wide girth at the top there.
Dan, I never want to hear you say the word girth ever again.
Girth.
Makes it a bit tricky if you've got to go for number two.
Trying to... Not too bad. You manage it.
Grab in a bottle of Sunny D. Just point out the joke if anyone didn't get it.
Sometimes you actually record on your phone, don't you, Dan? So you could actually take it in with you.
Yeah.
So
you go, friend of mine was telling me the story the other day. I won't name him, the squirrel. He knows what I'm talking about. Was driving down the motorway and he needed a poo. So he went. He saw some services and thought, oh, it's 16 miles to the next one. That's only 15 minutes. I'll last to the next services. And literally went a mile past the service into the biggest traffic jam ever he'd ever encountered.
Oh, no.
And he said, I just had to go. I just done it. Sat in
it. Fucking hell. Never done that.
Oh, Jesus.
I'd push a newspaper down in the footwell of the passenger side or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's quite a sight there. People look over.
Yeah, your straining face. Oh, no, there's aliens in the woodwork again.
Why is it the traffic starts moving and you just started and everyone's fucking beeping behind?
You just have to snap one off, wouldn't you? Anyway, where can people find you online, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which is cracking.
It's just about to kick into gear, this issue. So
nice. Yeah, it's looking awesome, dude. Very nice.
Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And thank you very much for listening, folks. It's been another cracking one. Stay tuned because we've got more in the pipeline. And just read loads of comics. Who knows what we'll read next week?
Yeah.
A few to catch up on, actually. I've got the review pile is getting bigger and bigger. I've got a couple of great Avery Hill books to talk about next week. So. Yeah, stay tuned.
I apologise to people that send comics and we don't get around to read it because they get sent a lot.
Yeah.
And not only are we relatively busy, we're also, well, me at least, I'm really bad at time management.
and he can't read.
Yeah. That's what I get for comics.
Anyway, folks, have a brilliant week. Get involved on the Facebook page. Read loads of comics. Have an awesome time and see us here next week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
Yeah.
Yeah.